Users expect the apps that you develop to be fast, secure, available, and intelligent. But today's apps must often compensate for the cloud provider's lack of security, and not all platforms can handle transactional data sets. With data services in Microsoft Azure, you can quickly design, deploy, and manage highly available apps that scale without downtime, and that enable you to rapidly respond to security threats. Features built into services like Azure SQL Database, Azure Search, and Azure Document DB help your app scale smartly, run faster, and stay available and secure. Learn more about how data services for Azure can give your users the experience that they expect.
What you saw was a quick introduction to Azure Database Services. Polyglot persistence is pretty common in modern cloud-hosted applications today. And the requirements of these modern applications is driving the industry to explore major technologies, which is data-driven, right? Historically, if you see, we have used a traditional RDBMS system or file system to store data. But with the growing needs and the data burst, we are looking at stores like big data, you know, native stores, JSON stores, or streaming stores, and at the same time, even tops for that matter. When you see it from a developer's perspective, it's very important that we give them this experience of easy to build. And whether it's their, you know, kind of existing applications or they're creating new applications in the cloud, which is heavily cloud-borne, we want to give them an experience so that they could do more with the data, right? And create that experience which is more modern. And the second piece we want to go and add to this modern application is the accessibility to go and evolve that application and create an iterative experience, right? In today's session, what we're going to see is how we take a modern approach to data in the applications. We're probably going to go and create an application from scratch, deploy it, and then add these Azure database pieces to it. Plus, you know, the other Azure database services, which is important to catering to the important needs and emerging needs of modern applications today. My name is Tara, and I'm the technical product manager for Azure Database Services. With me, I have Deborah.
Hi, Tara. Thanks for having me today.
It's a pleasure.
My name is Deborah Dove, and I'm a principal program manager in the Azure Database Services team. I've been now here across many of the technologies for almost 20 years. And had the pleasure of joining you today and jumping right into this application.
Amazing. So what are we doing today? I mean, I understood while having this chat with you that we're going to create this application, which is an e-commerce-based application. It's a retail website. And I thought that we're going to add some Azure database pieces to it, or you know, the services to build this modern application.
Yeah, we're going to build some great aspects into the app that's really going to make the app pop. Let's jump over quick to an overview.
Sure.
And so on the left here, we're going to be exploring this app through a couple of different customer roles. This is a tenant application, AdventureWorks. And we're going to be using a couple of customer roles to explore some of the features within the app, in addition to some of the admin aspects of the app that we've integrated in here for more of a combined ease of use for folks to be able to take this application and utilize it. Now, super exciting is the Azure Data Services, database services that we're going to be using within this application. Briefly, we'll go deep into each of these as we jump into them, but briefly, we're going to be using DocDB, a NoSQL document store,
right.
Rich capabilities, we'll jump into that as our main product catalog. We're going to be using Azure SQL Database for our critical transactional aspects of purchasing from this website.
Right.
And we're going to really, really expand the feature set and interactability of this application with search. So customers just have this really rich experience. Lastly, we'll also show a little bit of table storage and how that can be used. And here with this polyglot experience, we're really trying to demonstrate how you can utilize different stores for the best part of your application to get the scalability at the lowest cost that you need and get the most power out of all the Azure data services.
Amazing. Oh, I'm super excited to know more about it. Let's get going then, I guess.
Excellent.
Sure.
So jumping right in, here we've included the deployment scripts for easy deployment packaged as part of this application mm-hmm. for ease of use. And I want to just show you mm-hmm. how, what a breeze it is to start this deployment. So right. it's asking me now mm-hmm. which subscription I'd like to deploy this application into.
Sure.
And I'm going to provide it a subscription. The resource group is just validation that I don't already have one there.
Makes sense.
And then, as we discussed earlier, it's going to start creating a deployment template,
right.
which is part of the Azure Resource Manager mm-hmm. Tooling that allows you to do incremental deployments.
I see.
And deploy new versions of your application without fully being online, without taking your app down.
That's great. It's a great example, right? I mean, for somebody who would use these scripts to go and deploy an environment, it's going to be much simpler for them to have the whole package ready, you know, deployed out of the resource group and all the resources, I think. So what are the resources being deployed at this stage? I mean, what are we building?
Yeah, so as we talked about with the AdventureWorks app, we're exploring many Azure data services. And right. so here we're deploying the search service, DocumentDB, mm-hmm. we're deploying storage that we'll be using, and we're deploying SQL database, Azure right. SQL database, right. in addition to the website itself.
Oh, you mean the Azure website?
The Azure website.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Oh, that's lovely. Cool.
So this deployment takes only a few minutes. It's almost done. Mm-hmm. And as I said, it enables that incremental, not only from a perspective of once you've gone into production, mm-hmm. you can incrementally deploy new versions of your application while online.
Absolutely.
But then also that ease of development experience, being
Correct.
Able to deploy and come back.
Perfect.
So as this finishes up, we're going to explore, it's almost done here. We're going to explore some of the aspects
sure.
of the site itself.
Mm-hmm.
I've got another one deployed.
Great.
And here you can see all of the services that have been deployed as part of that deployment script.
Right.
And now, voila, it's populating data into our AdventureWorks mm-hmm. Database.
Mm-hmm.
And the website should be up in just a second.
Sure.
And from there, we're going to start exploring mm-hmm. the AdventureWorks website itself.
Sure. Okay.
So one of the things that I wanted to show you that the deployment script does provide at the end is it's going to provide me all of my connection information that we propagate back sure. From the deployment script
okay.
so that you can easily use those, cut and paste those, and use those as part of your developing and testing.
Makes sense. Yeah, this creation of the backend using auto deployment is going to be very, very helpful for the developers who are looking at this video. And are we going to share these scripts somewhere? I think we were planning to do that in GitHub.
Yeah, we're very excited not only to share deployment scripts, the entire application, and people can then really get their hands in deep into the code and explore. We'll be showing a lot of snippets here today,
sure.
but this will give you the opportunity, folks the opportunity to really dig in themselves.
That'll be
and
great.
And use this as a template.
Absolutely.
I mean, we really wanted to build this as a template, as a starting point.
Absolutely. I mean, that's going to make everybody's life so easier, right? The whole backend is ready. Now it's all about you going and coding on your application frontend, right? Using your Visual Studio tools and whatnot, right?
Just, exactly.
That's great. Yeah.
So my app is finished deploying, and what I've brought up here is the AdventureWorks website. We're showing here a single tenant, and we'll be exploring multi-tenant and SaaS applications sure. a little further in the demo.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, I'm going to jump right in here, and as we talked about earlier, I'm going to impersonate a customer, Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Melissa is very athletic.
Right.
And she's interested in getting into mountain biking.
Sure.
And so she comes to the site, mm-hmm. and she's looking for a mountain bike.
Oops. Where are the results?
Exactly. Where are the results? So here's where we get to adding the power into our application using search.
Oh, great. And no application is complete without search, especially these web applications where you're trying to search for a humongous amount of data. Like, this is mountain biking, as you said, right? Or like bikes available, bots and whatnot. It's a tremendous amount of data, right?
Exactly. And not only is it a large amount of data, but I mean, search is the interface that people are used to using.
True.
You know, whether it be their favorite browser, Bing, you know, any application, the capabilities of being able to find what you want and what you want quickly.
Right.
Search as a service now brings that to you without the overhead or headache of dealing with infrastructure, managing the service. You've got high availability. You've got auto scale that we'll be jumping into.
Amazing.
But also, you've got the richness and power of the search features.
Outstanding.
So let's, you know, we've got no search here. So I'm going to jump over.
Right.
And let's look first at what does search need to bring over to really fill that search index.
I was about to ask that question, that what are we doing with that search service as such and where the data is?
And yeah, so you mentioned, we mentioned earlier, the master data, the catalog data is in DocDB.
Oh.
But we want to be able to pull the pieces from that that we want searchable within the application.
Great.
And here we're creating one major search index, but you could create a bunch of indexes depending on the application you have.
Absolutely. Okay.
So from DocDB, a nice NoSQL solution that's schema free, we're able to come over here and look, hey, well, what are the information that we want to pull over from the products table, right? And there's a couple of different views. We can look at this with a nice easy JSON viewer. And we're going to be utilizing here the name.
Right.
So let's look at the code real quick.
Sure.
So we said we have an index in search. And from that index, we need to create an indexer. And an indexer has two key pieces of information.
Yeah.
It has the data source, and as we talked about, DocDB is the data source that it's coming from.
I see.
And we have, well, what's the index name? What do we want to index on?
Correct.
So let's go create that index now.
Sure. So that's why we couldn't see anything when we searched for that bike.
That's exactly why we couldn't see anything, because we hadn't yet created the indexer. We hadn't yet reached out to DocDB as a data source for the index and pulled in the relevant information that we wanted to search over. And here's just another view from the indexer that we're going to create of the data source and the indexer itself. And now let's create and run this index. So this part of the application, we've kind of integrated in both a both the customer experience into the app, but I also talked about another role that we're going to be using is the admin role. Oh. And so we've integrated that into this application. Obviously, with a production app, you'd have a separate admin experience. But we wanted to make that nice and easy and integrated for the use.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's a demo app, so you just, makes sense, right? I was about to ask this question. A customer would create that indexer. It's just to kind of put that in the portal, in the app, to make everyone's life easier, not to go back to the Azure portal to do it, rather do it from the website itself.
Exactly.
Just for the admin to go create that. Okay, that makes sense.
So I've now run the indexer, and
what's that doing?
So what the indexer is doing is it's actually going off to DocDB, and it's going to pull the relevant data based on the schema it discovered into search as a service.
I see.
And one other thing that I want to note here is my product catalog in DocDB might be updating as frequently as every day, every month.
Right.
Or here we wanted to show an example of manufacturers are constantly changing bikes and bike parts, and we want to make sure that our experience on our website is as up to date.
Correct.
And so we've included an indexing schedule of
makes
every
sense.
5 minutes.
Okay.
So now let's go back to Melissa and look at her experience with the website. And now that we search, you can see we've got data populated.
Oh, this is good stuff.
So the performance and speed of pulling the relevant data from the products that we wanted into search as a service, and now the rich capability of being able to search over this data.
So just a quick question. So when you ran that indexer, because the schedule was 5 minutes when we saw that in the code, but when you ran the indexer, you kind of forced it to go and populate the data, is it?
Exactly. Okay. I went ahead
just
and created and ran the index to save some time.
Makes sense.
And that can be run at any time. Anytime some catalogs might only be updated once a month, but then it's the holidays.
Oh, I see.
And you want to pull in a bunch of data.
Makes sense.
So you run it.
So now here, this is really interesting. I'm getting a lot of questions, so help me out, Deborah. I see that there is this best match on the left-hand side. Now I see there's this categorization, right? It's been refined and it looks like I could filter on this. So what's that all about? I mean, I just clicked on search and I searched for some data.
So
that looks exciting. What's that? Well,
just like with the power of search across engines, et cetera, we want that rich experience of categorization and filtering. And that is a feature within search called facets.
Okay.
So let's jump into that. And right before there, I do want to show you another cool capability that's expected from search, is what happens if I mistype? So I'll get back to your question on categorization.
Sure.
But I'm not the best typer in the world, and I'm definitely not the best speller in the world.
Right.
But you can see here, even though I've mistyped mountain, it still brings up mountain. It does the spell correct. And so now you can see that richness of capability of
the search, right? So you're saying, this is good. So you're saying the capability or the feature like suggester is helping me to kind of help solve even a problem in my typos, right? So it's just getting me the right data set, even though I typed mountain wrong. What a great example that was.
Exactly. So jumping into some of the other features that you were chatting about.
Right.
Let's look at, in addition to that richness of dealing with suggestions such that if I'm mistyping, how do I make things pop that I'm looking for?
Right.
Well, I can utilize nice features such as bolding or highlighting. And so here, I'm getting a great list, and I'm also getting that highlighting in the comments themselves for some of the bikes.
Brilliant. So, the last one is a comment somebody provided on the site, looks like.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And as Melissa is a new purchaser of mountain bikes, that might be a key aspect that draws her to a bike that she might purchase based on reviews of other people.
Yeah, makes sense.
So let's look at how highlights easily lights up in JSON. So as we talked about, with all of the search capabilities, we're able to pull in these highlights, and it's just a property on search.
Nice. Yeah, it just kind of pops out and says that you have searched for this specific keyword, and this is the sort of data I can bring for you. And is that feedback stored in DocumentDB as well?
The highlights
that you saw?
The feedback. Yeah, we'll get into that in just a second. I do want to cruise back to your categorization.
Definitely.
Because I want to show how powerful that categorization is in selecting bikes. So here, you know, Melissa, she particularly might only be looking for a 42-inch bike, right? And so she can filter and choose, hey, what's the best bike for me?
Interesting.
So with the feature of facets or categorization, she can filter down and say, hey, I really only want to look at bikes that are going to fit me.
Okay.
So one of the other things, let's look how easy it is to control some of those aspects in search through the code. Right. So we talked about that suggestions or fuzzing.
Right.
That's as easy as turning on fuzzing true.
Oh,
one of the things you noticed when I pulled up the search is there was a set
of
number
results.
Of results. And that can be customized. How big is, you know, how big is your screen? How big, what type of app are you building?
Right.
How many results? And that can be also dynamic. And then also, what were the key aspects of the categorizations that we want to pop? Here, the facets or categorizations shows us, you know, the key things that people narrow down bikes on is going to be that size, that manufacturer, and even they might be particular to a particular color.
Right.
Additionally, we showed that highlighting.
Correct.
That really pops the search result.
It does, indeed. And we can always make changes to the facets, right? I mean, currently this is defined based on probably the sort of strings we get in terms of, you know, how people are searching for data. So, you know, color is predominant, so is manufacturer and some of the aspects. But we can always add more to the facets.
We can add more to the facets. And what's excellent about it is because of the back-end DocDB of where search is pulling that data from, DocDB being a schema-free store, even if that schema changes, search can still pick up all of that rich information and new categorizations.
Absolutely.
And you can evolve your application and learn.
Perfect. And it's kind of populating it every 5 minutes. It's running on a schedule. I don't have to go and do things manually.
Right? Exactly.
Amazing. Yep.
So now I want to jump into some other aspects of search.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, you know, there's a bike particularly that is a really, really good deal. And I want that. Look at this guy.
I still wanted to ask that question.
on Supercell.
Right.
And there might be a few other bikes in here that I want to really highlight and bring to the top of this search experience. So let's click on one of these. And here we're going to jump over a little into that admin experience.
Sure.
So I'm going to edit the product details on this one.
So now I'm like the admin of this website.
Exactly.
Who knows that we have got a great deal of interest in this bike, or this is on sale. I want to put that in the top 10, or just right there popping up in everybody's screen.
Exactly. Oh, okay. I want that to pop to the top. And how do I do that?
Mm-hmm.
It's a feature called scoring profiles within search.
Sure.
And so here we've exposed it as priority.
Mm-hmm.
I want to pop this guy to the top.
Sure.
And I'm going to save him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to simply come back to the website.
Sure. Oh,
and as Melissa, I'm going to search again. And now we got that Mountain 200 right at the top, the white bike.
This is great. Okay, so so by using scoring profiles, we increase the capacity of this search indexer to go and pull the data out of the DocDB and just push it right at the top.
Right at the top.
And without changing much in my application, this is great indeed. Yeah.
So now let's get into some of the DocDB aspects.
Yeah, so why DocumentDB?
DocumentDB is an excellent, highly available, very, very scalable, NoSQL solution, schema-free solution that also, unlike other document databases, provide you the rich power of query and transactions over that schema-free data.
Amazing.
And here for a product catalog where I'm getting information from multiple manufacturers and I want high scale, DocumentDB is an excellent solution to bring in, suck in that JSON data.
Right.
Also, DocDB treats each entity as a unique URL. So I can just access those entities via HTTP verbs.
Oh, I see. And it's basically, okay, now I get it. So because we have no control over what sort of data would change, there's so many parts to it, maintaining schema for that could be pretty difficult and...
more dynamic.
Exactly. So, all right. And what about the, and you said it's like heavily, highly scalable store.
Exactly. So
that's
let's
so
even,
important.
Yeah, let's even jump into that.
Sure.
So I had showed you a bunch of the services.
Right. Was deployed initially.
That were deployed initially.
Right.
One of the other things I want to show you with DocDB is, so you can see here,
right.
I've done some actions against Doc itself.
Right.
And I'm going to show you just a couple more features in Church that will write back to DocDB some cool information. But one of the things on scale that I wanted to go ahead and show you is DocDB consists of collections and documents and scripts, store procs. We're going to be exploring a bunch of those. And here, for this application, I've actually split my customer collection across three to help scale those number of customers. And then when I pull that in to the website, that information, the rich query capabilities, is pulling that data all together and showing me a consolidated list of customers that have already registered within my site. So let's look at some of the stuff that between Search and DocDB that really makes that powerful experience. This thing is, you know, Adam says it's the best thing almost since laser sliced bread. I purchased this bike. This bike is awesome. I'm going to add my own review here.
Right.
And as Melissa. And now you can see I've got another little spike here.
Sure.
What did that do? That wrote back to DocDB.
Right.
Some of the key information. So let me pull up the reviews collection.
Right.
And you can see my latest review here.
This is great.
And so from the website, I've not only added my own comments, that's quickly gone into DocDB, and because our time has passed a little, I can cruise over here, and Melissa's going to search again. And, oh, yes, because... Not 5 minutes has passed, so I'm going to go ahead and run my indexer. Remember that indexer is on a schedule.
Right.
And so I've run my indexer now. I'm going to come back to Melissa, and doesn't matter if I mistype here. Search. For my mountain bike, and you can see that I'm getting the comments.
Yes.
Pulled in.
Right. That's perfect. So this is good. And just for the people who are viewing it, this video, I think one thing we probably have to highlight is that DocumentDB is a native store. Currently, it's storing data in JSON format. It's not a store for storing. Docs or PDF files. You know, it's very important. You know, the name maybe, but then it's such an easier way. The way you integrated that to the app and the use case is so perfect, right? I mean, you need highly scalable, you know, data to be bunched in and then put that into search for looking into the catalog. This is great stuff, right? Superb.
Exactly.
Great example.
So, let's now look at some more aspects of DocDB.
Sure.
We wanted to show this kind of schema-free aspect of DocDB. So one of the things here is you can see that, as you mentioned, this JSON formatting. And I'm able to pull in just a vast amount of information from a manufacturer about a bike and then surface the right information that I want to surface. Another aspect of the richness of DocDB is the capabilities of being able to do powerful stored procedures and user-defined functions. And where would that come into place? Well, if you noticed on my website, I have these different users.
Okay.
And so I'm going to come over here, and Melissa's in the U.S. So her prices are the U.S.
Right.
But I'm going to switch over to Jeff, who's in New Zealand. And you can see now with Jeff, as he searches, he's going to get bikes in New Zealand pricing.
That's a good point. Yep.
And let's look at, from a document store perspective, that's as easy as loading, calculating these prices, and being able to know what are the currencies within my application, and being able to write an easy store procedure that's going to calculate that.
Amazing.
Now, looking at the application, I then take that same code, and here's a Java snippet of that store procedure code to load that product details. And you can see part of the core aspect of loading the product details is what is the right exchange rate for each customer, in addition to pulling in other attachments and et cetera.
Yeah, because this is going to be a global application, right? I mean, come to think of it, we will be using this app across the world, and whoever logs in, local currency is such an important aspect. So when we move from one currency to the other, what feature of DocDB did we use? Is it triggers? Is it stored procs? Or
so it's a there's a combination that's going on. First, the stored proc needs is loading in the currencies, and then at real time, we're able to then calculate not just the currency exchange rate so that the currency shows up correctly in the website, but also, as you notice, what other discounts might be available for these products. So what's on sale? So we're utilizing stored procedures, we're utilizing user-defined functions to calculate the price, and all of that is pulled in through that load product details, as I also showed in the Visual Studio code over here. So I can use this environment right in the portal to write my code, test it, am I getting the right experience, and then integrate that in my app easy.
Beautiful. So this is the feature within the portal called the Script Explorer, which you're using to kind of go and create our scripts, whether it's stored procedures, functions, and whatnot. Tell me this. Is DocumentDB, looking at what we're doing, does it follow the asset properties?
Ah, yes.
It does?
Okay. Let's explore that. So we talked about DocDB not only just having that rich query over schema-free data, but also transactional capabilities.
Amazing.
So let's go look at some of those transactional capabilities.
Sure.
So here, what is one key aspect of changing a product that I might want to look at? You know, it might be price, et cetera. So I'm going to come in here, and I want to explore those transactional capabilities of DocDB. Let me pull that up. So here we go. I'm going to edit product details here. And again, that admin experience. And I'm actually going to pull up two editing experiences. So over here, I'm going to change this price slightly. And I'm actually going to discount it further because this bike is a really great bike. It's flying off the shelf, and I'm ready to give it a $100 discount. So here I'm going to save. Now, imagine you have another admin who happened to pick up your task. They think it's their responsibility also. So they come over here, and they also, well, want to change that price. So they go to save. Boom. I get a nice informational error that says, hey, you don't have the latest version of the information out of DocDB for this product, and you're trying to commit a transaction when another transaction has already occurred.
This is spot on. So this is the concurrency and isolation levels which are defined within DocDB. So that does follow the
ACID properties. Yes.
Right. It's transactional in its nature.
So one of the other things that I wanted to show with DocDB is when we wrote in that great review is the aspects of nested documents. So these reviews are kind of additional information from the original manufacturer information that we got. Mm-hmm. So we can easily add as much nested document content as we want. Here you can see I've added another review. Mm-hmm. And this is a nested document within
the set of documents.
Our set of documents.
Oh, great.
So let's look now. We've shown triggers, stored procs. We've shown some price conversions with other folks that are around the world and want to be able to see the products within their currency.
Right.
Now let's look at, we've been writing stuff back to DocDB.
Right.
And I was able to show here the power of our monitoring experience. You can see that as I write stuff back, those requests are coming in.
Correct.
We showed scalability across multiple documents and collections.
Right.
And from the aspect of scaling, we want to be able... From the aspect of scaling and transactions, there's also additional discounts that can be applied as a percentage.
Okay.
So not only do I maybe change the price of a document, but I can also apply a discount across the board for particular document, for particular...
Specific set of products.
Specific set of products, exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Whether that be across the materials, et cetera. The other thing I can look at is what if Melissa's here searching and she finds that bike that we had popped to the top.
Right.
And she wants to see all other bikes that are also recommended for mountain biking. Here again is that association of that additional rich metadata that we can store back into DocDB and pull out of search. And now I'm seeing not only the bikes that I originally looked for, but I'm also seeing what other bikes are also for mountain biking.
Kind of recommended. Yeah, I mean, in today's day and time, there's so many ways of doing it. This is just one way, right, that where we're recommending our users or buyers to come and say, hey, you know what, you bought this, but you can think about these bikes too. I mean, who knows, you might like the other one. But this could also be done through the machine learning aspect, right, today.
Exactly. But
this is a great example of how we can do it just sitting on an application and using DocDB in search.
Yes, but as you mentioned, I can learn from this. I can, as customers come up, buy, search for mountain bikes, search for mountain. They're purchasing a lot of mountain bikes. I can now pull that knowledge, that learned data, and build that collection of mountain bikes.
Right. How interesting it would be, right, the next time I log in but as Melissa or as Tara, and then I get these five pop-ups right on the screen without me even doing anything, just by looking at my records and the historical data and running those telemetrics on top of it and figuring out and saying, hey, Tara, these are the four or five bikes which you may want to go and look at. This could be of your interest, right? So I get it, what you're saying.
Yeah.
Cool.
A lot of power here.
A lot of power here, indeed.
So also, now we've shown the power of search in here.
Right.
We've shown how search integrates and pulls that data from DocDB. we changed prices, and we updated our search indexer because we did it in less than 5 minutes. Otherwise, the 5 minutes would have picked it up. Yep. And then our search popped the latest results with the priority to the top. Right. We showed the power of transactions in DocDB, nested documents. Mm-hmm. So now let's look further in the app. We talked about, you know, that polyglot persistence where we're using multiple data stores for the right solution in the right aspect of our app. So let's come over to our shopping cart. So here, we're going to use Table Store. And as we mentioned, as part of our as part of our deployment, we also deployed Table Store, Azure Storage. And Azure Storage is cheap, highly scalable store, key value pair, you know, also, you know, DocDB key value pair. But here, unlike that product master catalog that, that we want to interact with, consistently store data back to so that that learning experience in the application comes richer, the cart is really just about making that purchase.
So quick question there on the cart. So you said we're using Table Storage, and I, what I'm hearing is it's blazing fast, right? Storing some very smaller transactions, which stays for some time, and then it goes off. So it's not like a persistent storage sort of thing, which I'm kind of trying to use, or?
It is a persistent store if you wanted, if you're using it for that aspect. But here, we don't need it to persist once the purchase is made. So we can keep this store really small, very cheap, and utilize it, yet highly scalable. Holidays, sales, this thing also scales up just like our Azure, other Azure data services.
Right. And why Table Storage? So I know that we're exploring all these back-end data services. Why Table Storage? Like, I mean, we could have used DocDB or maybe a SQL database, but it's just more of the use case, right?
It's it's more here where we're just trying to explore each of the options.
Amazing, amazing.
You know, yes. You can use SQL DB for this. Yes, you can use DocDB for this. Here, we're also just trying to show you another powerful, low-cost tool to integrate into your app.
Amazing. And as far as we know the workload and how that workload looks like, it's looking very relevant now that I know if it's document-like or JSON data, it's going to DocDB. If it's transactional, probably will land up in SQL database. If it's key-value pair, smaller chunk of data, maybe, you know, just put it in Table Storage or go to Redis Cache, for an example. This is, now I'm getting it slowly, gradually, which is great.
And how you can just bring all of these things together as needed in the right aspects of your app to get the most scalability at the lowest cost.
Amazing. All right.
So we're going to go ahead as Jeff, and we're going to purchase this bike because Melissa said it's awesome. Adam said it's awesome. I've added it to my cart.
Lovely.
So I'm going to come over to my cart, and I want to make this purchase. As you saw, I'm getting it in a JSON view. And now, what does that look like? You just mentioned SQL database, Azure SQL database, as that transactional store.
Correct.
So that information in the storage card in a Table Store was just needed for a short period of time. But the critical aspect of that data was the purchase itself.
Indeed.
And here, I want to be able to capture that purchase in a relational store, highly transactional store, that not only, here's my last purchase from Jeff, I made a couple purchases from Jeff, but not only has the power of aspects that we're going to go into a SQL database of high availability, highly scalable, but also can tie into a larger chain of business logic. I've purchased a bike. I need to reduce my inventory for that bike. Potentially, I need to send a trigger off to my manufacturer and order more bikes. All of this can be tied together.
Yeah, and I've been hearing this, Deborah, maybe correct me on this a bit more, that you know, SQL database in the cloud, it's actually created for cloud-bound applications, SaaS applications, indeed. And most of this is a SaaS app we're looking at this stage. Importantly, the bigger question we get from our users, our customers at times is, how secure are these data stores? Like in SQL database, we heard about always encrypted, there's dynamic data masking, there's row level security. There's so many aspects to it which makes it like really, really secure, right? And it's PCI compliant and whatnot. So maybe at some time we should just see what security features we have. You know, maybe if that could be added to the app and how we go about it, that'll be a great piece of information to know for our audiences.
Yeah, so let's jump into some of those features, actually. Here's a quick graph that I wanted to show you during a holiday peak period,
right,
of us selling a large number of bikes. Mm. But now let's jump right into some of those aspects that you mentioned for Azure SQL Database.
Right.
And some of the key, you know, you talked about security. Let's jump into that.
Right.
So auditing and threat detection.
Mm, interesting.
You can turn auditing on in Azure SQL Database, and now you know exactly what operations mm-hmm. are occurring against your data mm-hmm. all the time.
Right.
And here, not only are you getting those actions, but you're getting notifications and alerts and proactive mm-hmm. threat detection based on the learning of your system.
So if somebody is trying to do like a SQL injection attack, I will be notified in advance if I'm using threat detection.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Very nice. And it's all built into the service. How amazing it is, isn't it? Like, you know, you just go and spin up a service and everything is managed for you.
Everything's managed.
It's all there in the portal. You just go, you enable it, and use the connection string to just take advantage of all the services and built into Azure SQL Database or even DocDBR Search, for example.
Exactly. And here, in this information, in another secure Azure store, we actually have a selection of where do we want to put that back-end threat data. And then, obviously, it's then pulling from that the logs, and we can search over the logs and get notifications, as you mentioned, from activity that's happening.
Sure.
Some additional rich, powerful features of Azure SQL Database and why you would want to use SQL Database as your core transactional purchase solution is not only the built-in high availability that you're getting. And we mentioned that across a bunch of the other services, four nines here for Azure SQL Database, but also geo-redundancy availability, disasters.
Wow.
So, and through the portal, also through the APIs, we've made this incredibly easy to use.
Mm-hmm.
So here, I want to just come over here and I want to protect myself just in case something goes.
Yeah.
I want to ensure that monetarily, mm-hmm. I'm hosting this website. Yeah. I want to make sure the money's coming in the event of, a disaster in one area doesn't necessarily mean that everyone, especially worldwide, since this is a worldwide app, isn't also purchasing.
No, it makes sense. You know, any application or any architecture is not complete without having a great high availability and a disaster recovery solution. Right, and as you rightly said, you know, these apps are going to be running in production, and tomorrow if something goes wrong with the primary production side, I need a place to fall back on.
Yes,
and it makes a lot of sense to have a great disaster recovery plan and at the same time a high availability solution. And again, it's all built in.
It's all built in. Mm. So, I can select a region.
Right.
I can select a server. I can even, and we'll go into some of these Elastic Database features as we explore that SaaS, software as a service app, when I have multi-tenants in just a minute.
Sure.
I can put that database directly into a pool that we'll talk about. And it's going to automatically go off and propagate the schema, propagate the data, and I now have this aspect of not only geo-redundancy for failover, but GeoDR allows you to have a number of readable secondaries.
Oh, that's great.
So if you're doing reporting, for example, over that purchase data, month-end reporting, why hit your primary database
Absolutely.
That customers are purchasing from when you can hit a read-only database to pull that data
Absolutely.
Back from and do rich reporting over.
Spot on.
So let's look at a couple more aspects. I wanted to jump in. You know, you mentioned that SaaS application.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this for some time when you showed me that Singleton database, that what if I have a multi-tenant architecture where I may have similar sort of schema across databases and they're all running in the same tenant, right, as such, in the big picture, if you see. Then how do I go and manage those thousands of databases in one shot, right? I mean, I could think of doing one from the portal, but let's assume I want to make a schema change across thousands of databases.
Yeah, so.
And that's this normal architecture for SaaS app.
Normal architecture for a SaaS app.
Right.
You know, one, why would I want potentially that separation of single customer per database?
Mm-hmm.
I want that isolation.
Sure.
I want predictable performance.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Next Games.
Right.
Develops Walking Dead,
right?
You know, first comes out, bunch of customers come in.
Mm.
You want infinite scale,
yeah?
You know, so you scale out, but you also want predictable pricing
Absolutely.
And predictable performance,
correct?
And in addition to that, are all of your customers necessarily going to be on the system all at the same time?
Mm.
Not necessarily, and so you want to be able to take advantage of the downtime
right.
of some customers while other customers are peaking. But have that predictable pricing, and we can do that
yeah.
through elastic pools.
And it's absolutely a typical scenario where I know that, like for an example, we have talked about it a few more times in the past. A normal ticketing application where you know that one of your concerts it's not like heavily selling concerts, but the others are. And then how do we distribute that load across each other? Is such an important aspect. And
exactly.
I think that's one of the things which Elastic Pools solve, I guess, right? Is that what you're saying?
It's exactly. That's one of the things that Elastic Pools solve.
Great.
And now you mentioned, okay, but now I have 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 databases, and how do I manage those databases
Correct.
As if they were one?
Right.
How do I easily manage those databases as if they're one?
Sure.
And this is where the feature of Elastic Database Jobs comes in.
Sure.
Elastic Database Jobs is comparable to SQL Agent for on-prem SQL Server and SQL in VM.
Sure.
And what we've tried to do to reduce the adoption and a friction of migration is we've actually adopted a lot of the SQL Agent parity with the API.
I see.
So folks that are very familiar with SPAddJob Step, we're going to be having a newer version of the job service, a hosted version of the job service coming
nice.
Out very soon,
nice.
Where the job agent itself is directly in Azure SQL Database.
Amazing.
And similar to SQL Agent using MSDB,
Sweet.
Jobs just uses a jobs metadata database.
You are making a lot of people happier right now when you said that, because it's been a feature requested by customers and users for
long time.
And having that as a service managed, it's great. Deborah, before you go there, one thing let's highlight this right for a second. Do you have an Elastic Pool with you at this stage?
I do have an Elastic Pool.
Can we have a look at the pool, how it looks like in general?
Yeah.
How you have added those databases and maybe that Elastic DTU thing? I mean, I've been hearing about it for some time and what that is like and stuff. So
I normally have a nice load running on this
one.
So
great.
Just imagine I have a nice load here.
Right.
We have functionality within the pool that'll analyze what is the peak DTU and average DTU, and actually suggest to you what are databases that should be added to a pool, removed from a pool, or moved to another pool, depending on their behavior.
Right.
And so when I initially created this pool, I added all 67 of my current tenant databases.
Right.
But you can see the richness of different capabilities that we've exposed through the portal here.
Right.
And now you also mentioned, well, how do I determine what is the right sizing
right.
for this pool?
Right.
And here's where, when I originally created this pool, I can, here, let's just show another pool
right, sure.
off of a server. When I originally created this pool, I can get a lot of suggestions
right.
on what are the right databases that might be the right candidates for this pool. So I just simply go to the server, mm-hmm. I say add new pool.
Perfect.
And from here, I'm getting some default values.
Right.
So I want to, from this, you can see I can create a pool right. with no databases, but I want to go ahead and add some databases.
Oh, that makes sense.
And here, then, it's going to give me what databases are potential candidates uh-huh. that I want to add to this pool. And right. as I said, I usually have a workload running here.
Yeah,
it but makes sense. Here, it would propagate the DTU information, and I can oh. simply select them, add them to that pool. In addition to that, I can customize this pool mm-hmm. in different ways, where I can specify, well, what are my pool level boundaries mm-hmm. itself mm-hmm. that I want to work with? Mm-hmm. So right. depending on the number of databases that I'm putting in this pool, depending on the workload
right.
of my tenants,
right.
I can customize this pool as high. This uh-huh. is a standard pool. I can customize it up to 1,200 DTU, and
amazing.
We're continuing to grow these numbers.
Right.
And you can see if this was essentially my price is adjusting, and if I were to have, you know, 67,000 mm-hmm. single databases, that cost would be significantly higher.
Absolutely.
Whereas here I can utilize the predictable performance and downtime of some of those other tenants and at that way bring my cost down.
What a feature. And these are one of those requirements of the modern applications to have that massive scalability and a huge amount of elasticity. And this is such a great example, because what you're doing is you are putting together all these databases in one pool, and it's kind of managed. And the best part, when you showed me that, it's also kind of recommending which are the databases I'm going to be using and take them out of the pool, which maybe I have exhausted the pool. How do I take that database out of the pool and put it in another one? Or during peak times, which databases should be clubbed together with the one which is like no peaks at all?
Or even easier, during peak times, I can just dynamically grow that pool DTU size.
Wow.
So deal with those peak times, grow the
right.
DTU size of the pool itself,
right.
and then as that calms back down, bring it down, and still optimizing my cost because I've only grown it during the period that I need to grow it.
Amazing.
The other nice thing is the learning that pool is constantly
right.
doing over the databases
right.
is you can set up different rules and alerts that can automatically look at, am I peaking out my pool or a particular database is peaking out my pool over a threshold of time.
Right.
I see a pattern. Mm-hmm. Let me learn on that pattern, grow that pool, and shrink that pool as needed.
Amazing. So we're reading all the information coming to the system, building some telemetries out of it, and then predicting using the machine learning models. Wow,
yeah.
This is super. I mean, it just makes everybody's life so easy. This is the easy and build experience we were talking about initially. And evolved and grew with the DocumentDB when we pulled that iterative experience into this application. This is a great example of a modern app. I mean, great. Yeah, keep going.
Sorry. So back to the job. I'm evolving my application, mm-hmm. and the first thing I want to do is, you know, as part of that evolution, is I need to create some more schema in my backend before
Absolutely.
I go and alter my app. And so I'm going to create a job here, just mm-hmm. create table one, mm-hmm. and that job is going to execute against all databases within my pool.
That's perfect.
And, well, you know, you mentioned that security.
Mm-hmm.
Security aspect here just as critical. Which credential do I want that job to run
True.
As and under? So here, I'm going to just do a simple create table.
Mm-hmm. And while you're writing that, Deborah, I mean, it may be a wrong question to ask, but then I'll still ask as you're here. So we know that we're building this Azure Active Directory integration to the SQL database. Question is, how does this thing work with jobs? Can we use a Azure AD credential to when you enter that name there, like Cloud SA? I'm just trying to know more about it.
Yeah, so at this point in time, we are SQL auth, but as I mentioned, that newer version of the service is coming out, and we'll be expanding that to Azure Active Directory.
Amazing.
I just wanted to double check my syntax real quick, make sure I have a big table. All right. So I'm going to propagate this across all of the databases within that pool. And jobs not only targets databases within a pool, but we're consistently adding first-class experiences, like all databases within a server. Or I want databases, all databases within a server with the exclusion of maybe that tenant mapping database. Another one is potentially I want my resource group that we utilized earlier. I want to execute that against all databases within my resource group.
That's running against databases now.
Yep.
All of them, all the scripts are running. That script is running across all the 67 databases, one shot.
Exactly. Asynchronously fan out across all the databases.
Lovely.
So in addition to Elastic Jobs as a powerful capability to really ease the management of dealing with a multi-tenant SaaS application, we have other Elastic features like Elastic Query. When you want to do ad hoc reporting, maybe there's something, the information that you need immediately. I got a meeting to run to, and I forgot to grab this one piece of data. Elastic Query enables you to query across any number that you define. Again, it could be all databases in your pool, all databases in your server, et cetera, whatever your data tier is represented it as.
Right.
And being able to pull that query into Excel and do Power BI directly over it.
Amazing. So the Elastic Query, is that something which is not built into the portal and I need to do programmatically?
Correct. Yeah. Not yet built in the portal, but we'll be going there also. Sure. But programmatically, it's fully surfaced through T-SQL. And so you can set it up. And then once it's set up, you essentially have a head node database that query result set is being pulled into. And then I can connect Excel directly up to that database, customize my query, and do my report right off of it.
Amazing. So these are some great tools, right? I mean, you've got the Elastic Query, which is helping you kind of populate data out of multiple databases, like in single frame. Then you've got Elastic Jobs, where you can run re-indexing or create indexes across several databases. I mean, think of it today, how we do it. We write our scripts and we automate it and stuff like that. But having that built into the database, Azure SQL database, it's such a game changer, right? I mean, what you can do now is you can just concentrate on building great applications. Forget about the backend. You know, we have taken care of it, and it's like a fully managed service, highly elastic, fully scalable. What a great example of that, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, and with the jobs, not only, as you mentioned, those schema changes, scheduled jobs. Like indexes, but also we have a number of customers that run rich business logic using jobs. And so they're pulling back. I did a non-results returning query in my example, but they're pulling back results returning data about their customer usage patterns. Are they within SLA for their customer? Rich business logic, like processing information, and being able to trigger one job, the results of that job, then trigger another job and down that pipeline.
Amazing.
Another aspect that we touched on and that I want to talk about on the Elastic Database features side is we talked about that power of SQL database with the transactions and the purchasing data and inventory.
Right.
There's Elastic Transactions, which is also generally available, where you can actually do a distributed transaction now across multiple Azure SQL databases.
A two-phase commit.
Two-phase commit, yes. So that scenario of needing to decrement your inventory or needing to send off a signal to your manufacturer, that can all now be done within a transaction with the purchase so that you know that the purchase actually is committed, and now let's decrement that inventory.
Outstanding. And this was, again, an ask for long, right? People have been asking us, when you guys going to bring in the two-phase commit thing? And with Elastic Transactions, that's another world altogether.
Yeah.
This is great. So a quick question on this. So let's come back to the application we were into. So, but if I have to think about the whole pool aspect, I understand that we are building that, we probably will port this, and you know the scenario will expand from here. So we may have now like multiple applications like that hosted out of the whole multi-tenant architecture. So in that sense, having those singleton databases in a pool together would help tremendously, isn't it?
It helps tremendously, both from the perspective of managing that predictable performance at predictable pricing, but then also with that elastic tool set, being able to manage those as one and having very rich capabilities over those databases without the overhead of needing to think about, I have 10,000 databases.
Interesting. Great.
So with our app, let's simulate here, a mass order that's happening.
Sure.
And let's look now at what that looks like from the portal when we're hitting our Azure SQL database really heavily and purchasing a lot of data, purchasing a lot of bikes.
Sure.
So
in a nutshell, the site is really heavy at this stage. And as an admin, what do you do to kind of solve that problem?
Exactly. And this, again, just like we talked about when you're managing your databases in the pool,
right.
All of this is learned data,
correct.
Can utilize our notifications, our alerts,
correct.
Define thresholds, and be able to react quickly and even be able to set up rules and react automatically so you can have a good night's sleep. So here, I've run the mass generator of purchases, and you can see that I've got some spikes against my database. And those spikes, once they go up in the utilization, boom, they come right back down, because what's happening against that back-end database is just that core purchase aspect.
True. So I see that there's something, maybe you want to help me with before you go to the next step, is I see there's this pricing tier, right? The pricing tier is currently being set to S1 standard. And we saw this in DocumentDB as well. We had the RUs, which I felt was the resource units, and then we have DTUs, which is the database transactional units. How does that help in determining what sort of tier I should be in? What's a DTU in general?
So a DTU is a database transaction unit. And we have a lot of great performance papers that can help you look at your workload and also through the portal, help you understand what is the right scale or service tier and the right DTU that I need for my application. So just like I ran the mass generator, that's a workload,
right?
So I can simulate what is my average workload, what is my heaviest workload, and then the learning from the system will help tell me and advise me what is the service tier that would be best used for this app.
Right. So if I think of it in this way, maybe an application which is defined as bronze, silver, and gold, right? I can, or maybe say, we should say silver, gold, and platinum. If my assumption is correct, I might just use a basic tier for my silver application, gold for standard, and all my platinum applications runs on premium because it needs that sort of horsepower. And the DTU, as you said, I think it's a blend of all the IOPS, memory, CPU together. So it's basically a calculation of all of those things to be blend together. And then you could use that for resource consumption.
Okay. Surfaced up. And so, we looked at the pool. let's say a standard HERE database in this tenant application mm-hmm. is 150. Mm-hmm. When we looked at our pool
right.
that we had created, I had selected, and that standard had 100 DTUs mm-hmm. for that single database. But as we know, on configuring our pool, not all our tenants are necessarily active at the same time, but again, those workloads right. can help us analyze that data. Mm. Here I have 67 databases. Mm. I can bring my DTUs of my pool now up so that those databases are sharing the utilization
I see.
Of the pool.
Right.
And 150 compared to, you know, across 1,000 databases where I can stick 1,000 databases in here mm-hmm. and only have a price, a fraction of the price, yet get the same performance.
Interesting.
Guarantees out of it.
So for this application, which we were looking at, and when you ran that mass generator, assuming that it sustains for, let's say, minutes to hours, right? And I saw that the database was an S1 standard, so it's using those 20 DTUs. But I understand this application would need something like a premium one. Can I make that change online?
You can, exactly.
Okay.
You can make that change online. And no downtime to your application.
Sweet.
And let's take a look at that.
Sure.
So I'm going to come back to, actually, I have this pinned for, oh. Got it pinned.
That's okay.
There we go. So let's come back in and look at our SQL database.
Right. Right.
And here you mentioned, well,
right.
how can I change between those service tiers dynamically with no downtime? I right. can cruise up here, change
select.
To a
higher
T1,
tier.
A higher mm-hmm. tier, and it's now going off and processing that
okay.
in the background.
Sure.
I have
oh,
one of the things
me.
I did here. Yeah. One of the things that's important for the GeoDR replication is that when you set up a geo relationship mm-hmm. and if failover occurs, we want to ensure that that failover performance on that secondary it's when it becomes primary is the same.
Okay.
And so that just gave me a quick notification that, hey, you have a geo relationship set up. So first, right. either I could do one of two things. If I want to stay mm-hmm. totally online, just go first up the service tier of
sure.
my secondary
and then
up the service tier of my primary. And again, both of those operations would happen online.
Sweet. So if we would have taken any other database and I would have done this change online, my application doesn't go down at all for that period of time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Would you know, just in case, what happens in the backend? So when I made that change in the transition from standard to premium, what are we doing really? I mean, if that information could be shared at all?
Yeah, so I mean, we are, a premium is similar to standard, a dedicated resource that has a higher DTU, right? That IOPS throughput
Correct.
CPU.
Right.
And what we're doing there is we're using the same underlying technology mm-hmm. as replication and high availability,
I see.
Our replication technologies. So it's creating a replica
oh.
as a premium and then closing the gap of that transaction log.
I see.
And at the optimal time mm. when it's caught up, mm. it's just going to
flip over
and switch. And in any rich modern application, you have some level of mm. retry logic built into your application.
Great.
You know, cell phones, hiccups, et cetera. But you want that experience to be seamless.
Right.
And just like with our high availability, you won't even notice in the app that it's flipped over and you're just getting better performance, greater performance.
This is super awesome. This is great. I mean, what we saw today was, we built the app, we initially deployed it, so we created those auto deployment scripts using PowerShell, which shows how we can use these tool sets with Azure, right? That's first big thing, right? I mean, sitting on my desktop, remote PowerShelling, amazing. We deployed this like in 3 minutes, the whole backend system within Azure website and the code being deployed out of it. You know, publishing the code is so simple, right? With Visual Studio, you just kind of go and publish a website and it's right there in the portal, right? And then we saw this amazing power of DocumentDB to store JSON data and then building that search indexer on top of it to create that catalog, that rich catalog and
schedule.
The facets,
yes.
Right? The scheduling, the suggesters, the natural language processing. And the best part is that search has its own store, and which means that it kind of caches all this data into it and you
highly available.
Highly available, highly elastic. And then we saw the DocumentDB asset properties. We saw that how we use the nested documents and how you kind of made those changes to the commands and the ratings, and it all just went to the DocDB in like seconds.
And then search picked it up. I ran that indexer because I run every 5 minutes. I ran that indexer and then I searched again and boom, there was my comment.
So the first part was how easy it was to build this application, right? And the second part was we saw how we evolved this application into a modern app with this iterative experience of DocumentDB edition, the search pieces. And then we got into the SQL database part where we started seeing when you did these transactions, best part is that you know all your transactions are encrypted at rest, and at motion. And then you showed me the threat detection and the auditing capabilities, then the Jira application. You move to Elastic Pools. This is heaven. I mean, this is awesome. I love it.
And this is how you can really benefit from the richness of our data services and build a modern application at high scale, high protection, high security.
Correct.
At the right cost.
And the multi-tenancy.
Yeah. And the multi-tenancy.
The multi-tenancy is...
Which is core for software as a service.
Absolutely.
Being able to isolate your customer workloads, yet utilize that as a pool of resources is just incredibly powerful. Keeping those costs down, being able to use the downtime of others while you're peaking for others. And then we also talked about that learning that's
correct.
Happening on the pool, that constant feedback loop.
Correct.
And your ability to dynamically increase the pool, just like we increase the service tier of our database to increase the pool size and then bring it back down as needed.
Correct. And that applications learning and adapting to these changes, right? I mean, it's so critical, right? I mean, it will change. Every moment your applications would change, but then making sure that you have a data store which can learn and adapt with your application is super awesome.
It's what modern is about today, right?
Absolutely. And then protecting it on the fly. You know, there's nothing you have to go and create 100 different things. Everything is built in. Just go and make those changes and you're done. And then on top of that, this heavy need of elasticity and scalability. I mean, if your applications can scale like that, what do you need, right?
Achieving infinite scale out.
Amazing.
You know, at every shop,
yes,
you want to grow. And you want your application to be able to grow dynamically with it. And you want all of your services to be able to grow dynamically with it.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, that's great. You know, I mean, audiences, if you guys have looked into it, I mean, you know, this is an example of how you can, you know, evolve and grow an application. So you don't have to go and make, you know, tremendous amount of changes. It's in your existing app, adding these pieces are super, super easy. Right, and they're all REST API based.
REST API.
So that makes it all the more easier, right? This has been a great session, Deborah. I think we learned a lot. You took us through a great journey, you know, starting from deploying the app from scratch to how we built that indexer to the DocDB piece, you know, the whole JSON aspect and the SQL database.
And even
the table storage.
Table
as well.
Storage, and even through the portal, the abilities to create some of those.
Very
aspects
important.
Of your app in the code there,
right.
Test it, use it, and then just boom, cut and paste that into your application.
Very important point indeed. This is great. Thank you so much, Deborah.
Thank you, Tor, for having me today.
This has been awesome. You know, thank you so much. Thanks, guys, for watching us.
Thank you very much.